It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, HBR1 station statewide, also online at hawaiipublicradio.org, where we keep all of our segments archived. Every Friday afternoon, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to the disabled and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are learning about one of the most frightening conditions that could affect any one of us. And it's an enormously stressful condition that not only for the person who's dealing with it directly, but also their family, loved ones, caregivers. It's the sixth leading cause of death in our country, the fifth leading cause of death for all of those over 65, the only top 10 cause of death that can't be prevented, cured, or even slowed down. It's Alzheimer's disease. There will be a number of ways people in the islands will be trying to combat the disease and help those who have to live with it and their caregivers and loved ones. The walk will be held. It's a walk to end Alzheimer's. There are several of them happening for Hawaii Islands. Kauai on August 12th, in the Honolulu area, September 2nd, Hilo, September 16th, Maui, September 23rd, and wrapping up in Kona on October 7th. So something for literally everyone across the state, and we are grateful to learn more about the walks to end Alzheimer's, the Alzheimer's disease itself, and of course the Alzheimer's Association Aloha Chapter. We're welcoming back Aloha Chapter Ambassador Steve Tam. Aloha and welcome back.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for thinking of us again.
You are quite welcome, and you guys obviously doing a lot of thinking and planning, so a whole bunch of walks we're going to hear about coming up and starting very soon. And we'll get some details on practical things that people should look for when contemplating the arrival of Alzheimer's in their life or loved ones. But first, a little background on how the Alzheimer's Association Aloha Chapter functions and helps folks.
Sure. Well, first of all, the Alzheimer's Association is the leading voluntary health organization in Alzheimer's care, support, and research. And really, the vision is a world without Alzheimer's disease. And the organization's mission is to eliminate the disease, you know, through the advancement of research, provide and enhance care and support for all affected, and to reduce the risk of dementia through the promotion of what we call brain health. And just so you know, also the Aloha Chapter is headquartered in Honolulu at the Nimitz Business Center. And so we welcome people to visit and call when they need help as well, too. We also serve residents across the state and have staff on Hawaii Island, Maui, and Kauai.
So the disease itself is, in introducing you, I mentioned some of the frightening statistics, and I'll just pick one of those out to repeat. Fifth leading cause of death for everyone over 65. Maybe I'll add one more to that. Only one of the top 10 things can't be prevented, cured, even slowed down. Who is affected by Alzheimer's? What are some early symptoms? The ages that people should maybe look for these symptoms or think about it or when it might kick in, and just some other warning signs that folks should know.
Yeah, Dave, it's really a disease that affects just about everybody in the community. They may not have it, but they may know someone that has it or are a caregiver. And if we look at it on a larger basis, there's about 5.5 million Americans with the disease right now, and about 5.3 million of them are age 65 or older. The other 200,000 are under age 65 and it's what's called younger onset Alzheimer's.
So the vast majority are, from these statistics, the vast majority are 65 and up.
The vast majority are, and it's really a disease that you see as people get older. If we then take a look at it and drill down more to Hawaii and how it's impacting Hawaii, there's about 27,000 people with Alzheimer's in Hawaii. You know, as we look at that number, what does it mean? It means that about 1 out of 10 people over age 65, you know, has Alzheimer's. And as we look at the older population, 1 out of 3 people over age 85 have the disease.
Does that mean there's a lower number, a lower percentage here than on the mainland? Because if it's 1 in 10 here of everyone over 65, and it's fifth leading cause of death for everyone over 65 on a national level. When you put those numbers together, does that mean we have a lower percentage?
No, what happens is that also it's a little bit misleading in the sense that when we talk about the cause of death, that's even understated, because oftentimes when people pass away and you look at their death certificates and everything, it doesn't show Alzheimer's as the cause of death. There's other factors. It could be pneumonia. It could be malnutrition and things like that, which are actually named as the cause of death.
So number of people who have something and cause of death are really two different statistics.
Yes.
And I get it now. I get what you're saying.
And then also, you know, what people oftentimes ask me is, well, you know, it's such a major disease, you know, how do we know, you know, that you have it? Or, you know, are there signs of it, for example? And there are warning signs of it. You know, Alzheimer's talks about the 10 warning signs, you know, some of them like memory loss that disrupts daily life. Everyone has a little bit of memory loss, but when you can't function, you know, that's, for example, one. Or then, for example, challenges in planning or solving problems, difficulty in completing familiar tasks, confusion with time or place, trouble with conversation, not being able to really to speak or converse, and also a decrease in judgment and a withdrawal of work and hobbies and changes in mood. These are some of the things that, you know, oftentimes are signs of it and that people should be on the lookout for.
How early do those signs begin to precede the arrival of more serious symptoms?
It varies by person. You know, it's something that the disease is something that may not be easy to recognize. There's a difference between a typical age-related cognitive change and signs of Alzheimer's. It can be very subtle. You know, just as individuals are different, so are Alzheimer's symptoms among people different. For example, a common symptom is a gradual worsening of the ability to remember new information. This happens as part of the brain involved in forming these new memories are destroyed. And as more of the brain is destroyed, other symptoms appear. And these are, you see, such as people becoming more agitated. They are not able to sleep at night, or they have delusions. And then as the disease progresses even further, people need help with things such as bathing and dressing and eating and using the bathroom. People also will eventually lose their ability to communicate, become bedbound, and need 24/7 care. And when, just so you know too, when people cannot move, you know, they're prone to infections like pneumonia. And Alzheimer's can then destroy other parts of the brain, you know, that control things like swallowing, and also people become vulnerable to dehydration and malnutrition as well.
And you can also, excuse me, on that lack of mobility, bed sores, serious infections can come from that too.
Yes. You know, what happens is that people just are not able to move. And so it really is very much important for the caregiver to be in tune with what's going on.
Exactly. Then the caregiver's role in moving the person in a strategic way becomes critical. I mean, it becomes life or death.
Yes.
As it can for many diseases that immobilize you. Determining if it's Alzheimer's. So there's a lot of different symptoms, ages. There's a lot of useful information you've provided. On the determining end, talk about how a doctor or doctors would come to the conclusion and figure out, you know, you've got some of these symptoms, you go to your healthcare provider, you're concerned, what happens next?
Yeah, what happens next is that doctors will work with a team of neurologists or geriatricians. And really, there's not one single test, but they're going to be looking at several different factors. You know, they're going to be assessing the patient's overall health. You know, look at other things such as their medical history, what's their mental health. You know, they'll do a physical and a neurological type of exam. And all of these things put together really help to determine, you know, whether or not they have the disease. It's important to be able to determine it so people can then plan for it.
And absolutely. And that's a wide range of a wide ranging checklist that does not really include any physical. Like, it's not, you can't do a blood, there's no way, let me ask it in a different way. I understand that most of the ways that they determine it don't come down to a benchmark such as a blood test or some other more physical and concrete measurement. Are there any physical signs that they can detect in someone's blood, or basically it all comes down to I don't know what that.
Yeah, there's what they call biomarkers, which are really in the genes if they really test that, but it's not something that people frequently do. And so often more often than not, the diagnosis is really by the doctors and really interviewing not only the patient but also the family, and
right.
They can tell.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. That makes a lot of sense. And so it involves a lot of different doctors, right, that would come together.
Yes.
You would end up with a lot of different doctors, and the testing process would revolve around them checking the things that Steve just mentioned. Excuse me. And the disease, you mentioned it, the disease is a killer. And so once somebody is determined that they have Alzheimer's, I am imagining just like each person's reaction to it and their symptoms that they get can vary quite a bit. The progression and the way that it eventually kills a person also could have very different timelines.
Yes, it can. And I guess what I wanted to point out is that Alzheimer's is a disease that I say takes no survivors. In that other diseases, you know, some forms of cancer and things like that, you hear of, for example, a cancer survivor or someone that has survived some sort of disease. With Alzheimer's, that's not the case. You know, really what, you know, I really want to see in my lifetime is to be able to see that first survivor of Alzheimer's disease. And you know, what it's going to be is that with Alzheimer's, because it destroys the brain, it's something that, you know, you can't replace the brain. So, you know, so much of it involves work and research on prevention as well. And then what happens if someone does have the disease, then it's a matter of slowing it down and then possibly even keeping it in limbo, so to speak. But that's what we're trying to do right now.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. So there isn't, and when you talk about prevention, dialing in on that for just a moment, they don't have a lot of concrete knowledge of where this might come from, do they?
There's a ton of research, and you know that's the promising, and really, if I'm optimistic about anything, it's the millions of dollars of research that are being spent to be able to look for a cure or a prevention or some way to effectively treat it. It's really, this research has to be done on a centralized basis, and that's why we see it so much on a national basis to be able to do that. And funding Alzheimer's is one of the people that heavily advocate for additional research as well, because that's how you can really fight the disease, by preventing it.
Right. And that's probably how you're going to be able to stumble upon something that is causing it potentially too, by looking closer at people.
Right, because it's something where we need to find a way to find a cure or prevention, because it's so costly. You know, it's something that it's people have heard that it's the costliest and most expensive disease in America. And it's because of the fact that, you know, there's the numbers are so staggering, it's really hard to imagine. They estimate that there's about $259 billion spent in 2017 on Alzheimer's. And of that, about $175 billion is Medicare and Medicaid related.
And again, that big number, these are billions, you just said, $275?
Yeah, $1 billion.
Billion,
so that's
in
a
one
quarter,
year.
Yes, that's a quarter of $1 trillion.
In our country. A quarter of $1 trillion just in 2017?
That's right. It's a hard number to really get your hands and your minds around. And really, we relate it more from a caregiver standpoint as well, too, because you know what people are finding out, especially if their family members have the disease, is that they cannot expect Medicare or Medicaid to cover most of the costs for the care. In fact, what happens is that Medicare does not cover long-term care, which is really the personal care, such as the feeding, the
right.
bathing, the dressing, and the
critical
toileting.
Home health care aids.
Yeah, and that's really where the costs are these days, because it's the non-medical care. And this is really not done by nurses or by doctors, but by unpaid family caregivers for the most part.
Right. Or if you can afford it, poorly paid home health aides that don't have a whole lot of training either.
Yeah. So what happens is that people want or families want their loved ones to stay at home as long as possible. And so they also want them to feel comfortable in the home, and they want to have the proximity of their loved ones right next to them. There's also a sense of obligation in a lot of people's minds that they have to take care of their mom or their dad just like they were taken care of when they were young as well, too.
And then there's a whole bunch of people who don't have a family, and then this whole crisis becomes even more catastrophic.
Yeah, it's something that, as you look at it, because Alzheimer's is a disease that is not something that you have for 1 year or 2 years.
Right.
You know, this is a disease that can last anywhere from 4 years to 8 years to 10 years and longer. And the bulk of this disease is not one where you need medical care. It's one where you need that type of in-home personal care.
And that's
the hard part for family caregivers.
And it runs, last time you were on, I remember it was staggering the amount of dough it takes for a year if you were to be able to afford getting into a care facility in Hawaii. You said those figures before.
So what it is that because there's about 66,000 unpaid family caregivers right now, what happens is that at some point in time, you know, they're going to probably need to get additional help because they can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really a couple of different primary options for them. One is that, you know, if they want to be able to or need to move them to another facility outside of the home, they can if they have the financial resources. You know, what it costs is it can range anywhere from about $5,000 or $6,000 a month to about $12,000 or $13,000 a month. Right now in Hawaii, for a skilled nursing facility to be in something like that, it's costing on an annual basis about $141,000 a year to be able to have someone in a home. And I really don't know most people that can do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... It wipes out the families is what you're saying is there's a gigantic cost.
There is a gigantic cost.
For everybody who would be caring about that person because it's going to wipe you out financially unless you're, as you just pointed out, extremely affluent. And it's going to also have the other part, which is less numbers and more the spiritual drain. You know, that's not an easy thing to face.
It's not.
And I know you've been there yourself and you've seen, you know... You know, you've seen your loved one, your father, in this case. And so that's the other part of, the disease when we talk about the fifth leading cause of death. Well, there's a huge, all of the people who love those folks have also gone through quite a sacrifice.
Yeah, it's really those unpaid family caregivers, you know, those 66,000 people that are helping out. You know, they're not only adult family members, but also the grandparents,
right.
I mean, and the grandchildren as well. And so it's something that everybody gets involved in. You know, the really the scary part about it is that, you know, there's about 60% of the family caregivers are actually even working as
right.
well, too, because they have to work. They need to work to actually realistically pay for some of the care that's
right.
needed as well, too. And so what we're finding right now, too, is that there's a lot of stress on these paid working caregivers. And sometimes what they're finding is that while the workplace is sort of familiar with it, it's not something where supervisors are really, you know, really understand what it means to be a caregiver. You know, childcare issues people are more attuned with and understand, but caregiving for an adult is sort of a new type of trend right now.
And it's also probably dictated to some degree by people who are living longer. So this is going to become what you're describing, and they need for empathy from employers and others is going to be a skyrocketing need.
Right. Caregivers right now, the typical caregiver is predominantly female, but there are a lot of male caregivers. They spend on average more than 20 hours, you know, a week. And so what happens is that these caregivers really are under stress themselves. They really think that they're under, you know, a high degree of stress, and that it's so important for these caregivers to really focus on themselves as well, too, because they have to maintain their health, because if they're not healthy, then they cannot take care of their loved ones as well.
Well, they're on the first lines, the front lines of it, and that makes a lot of sense. On that same note, there's it's a sobering reality, and no question, a lot of people out there, as you said, probably, as you said, if you don't have a loved one that's facing it, there's every chance that you could be facing it, and there's every chance you know someone who is either facing it or they have a loved one. And that's why there are opportunities throughout the entire state to be able to contribute to the effort in both raising awareness for Alzheimer's, which does things like you were talking about, I think, of getting more empathy from employers and others in the community who can play a role just by being understanding of their employee and what they're facing. And these walks that they have, the walks to end Alzheimer's, also enable people to not only raise awareness and some funds, but gives you a sense of camaraderie too. And it can be a great outlet for people who have been touched by any number of tragic things and just want to know that they're involved in something positive where they're trying to help. And so I'm going to run through these dates, and then I was hoping you could talk about ways people can take advantage of them. First, Kauai coming up real soon on August 12th, then the Honolulu area on September 2nd, Hilo September 16th, Maui September 23rd, Kona on October 7th. People can tap this as a group. People can tap this as an individual mission they just want to go on in memory of any number of people, loved ones. Doesn't even have, can be a pet, can be anyone that you want to do something good for and just to feel like you're trying to give back. Talk about the ways people can harness their goodwill.
Sure. And so caregivers and family members of people that have Alzheimer's really deserve all the credit. They are oftentimes a silent army of caregivers as well, too. They do it without anyone knowing that they're doing it, and they do it because of love for their mother or father or a family member as well, too. So they oftentimes do it alone. And so this type of situation, such as a walk, is a way for people to be able to come together, mm-hmm. to see that they're not alone, and to see that there's others that, you know, have very similar type of backgrounds. And so, you know, we at the Alzheimer's Association, what we are looking for is people that want to help out. You know, then they can help out in various ways. There's a walk committee of volunteers, you know, to help out, to organize, to do that. To be able to start a team of people, you know, in your workplace, you know, whether it be 5 people, 10 people, or even larger, so that you can get together as a team and walk as a team. Maybe have your own T-shirt or something, mm-hmm. so that you can recognize yourself. To be able to maybe provide in-kind donations if you're a company, whether it be water, food, door prizes, you know, become a corporate sponsor. Or if you're unable to walk, to even give a tax-deductible donation as well.
These are all ways you could support them, and obviously, as Steve indicated, there are material ways you can support the organization and their walk by donating supplies that they could use. You can be on the walk, and you raise funds that way. You make challenges. You can put it out there in your social media if you do that, or just tell your friends, maybe text them, hey, I'm doing the Alzheimer's walk. And join me if you'd like, or make a pledge. If you can't make it, that's another way. You're like, well, I know my friend is making it, or I can't make it that day. You'll just make a donation to the organization. There are a lot of ways that you can support the walk. Do you need other volunteers throughout the year? Is that a need that you guys have? Are there any other ways that people can support the organization?
Yes, Dave, there are definitely is a need for volunteers throughout the year. And so the Alzheimer's Walk is one of the signature events. There are other signature events throughout the year that need volunteer support. The Alzheimer's Association is a relatively small organization. The key to success is really volunteers. And so we can use the help in so many different ways, you know, organizing activities, even being in the office to handle phone calls or doing daily tasks in the office, things like that too. And really just to be able to spread the word about what's going on, you know, whether it be a walk or something, to send it out on Facebook or Twitter that this is what's important to you.
It's a great way. There's a lot of ways you can help out, and it's a really worthy cause and a frightening one, too. Let me give you some contact information so you can go and get your team started right now. ALZ.org/Hawaii is how you can reach the Alzheimer's Association Aloha Chapter online. 808-591-2771. You can give them a call. You can register online at ALZ.org/walk. Or you can call 800-272-3900. You can fill out a contact form at their website to reach them electronically that way. And you can get all the contact information, the radio feature, the full-length feature, and all of our previous Helping Hand guests online at hawaiipublicradio.org. Anything else that we obviously, it's a very serious topic and the kind of, it's the kind of topic you could talk about every day because it's affecting that many people. It's unresolved. It clearly has a huge, look at Glenn Campbell. You know, the guy has resources that few people have, and you can see what he's going through. So it illustrates, it's something that is a serious problem. And if any one of us is left to face it, just looking at his example, you can see that it's going to be a withering fight. Even if you've got the best of resources, this is something that really is a scourge in our society, and we need to try to do everything we can. And like you said, all that money, you may be able to stumble upon a critical ingredient in what's causing it or a critical ingredient in what may lead to this, what could be a great day for you when you hear there is something that would enable the first survivor. Clearly, you are a survivor because they're the family members I look at are survivors in some way because they've gone through it. They're here to speak on behalf of their loved ones. What are elements of your mission that we didn't cover that you need to?
Yeah, thanks so much, Dave. And yes, I do really live to see that first survivor. And part of it is also, too, what we did not cover is that, you know, if by chance you talk to or come across, whether it be state or federal legislators, let them know how important it is to find a way to fight and support Alzheimer's. You know, there's a lot of different things that need to be done, but it's something that it does require funds, and it's the research funds as well, too. And it's not only Alzheimer's, but it's for caregivers of so many different diseases, and baby boomers right now are the ones that are the primary caregivers. But keep in mind that in 10 years or 15 years from now, those caregivers are going to be the ones that need caregivers. And what are we going to do to help them out?
The the legislative session, they passed a bill that would help family members and caregivers.
Yes. We do want to thank the state legislature this year. There is a bill that provides some limited financial assistance to working family caregivers so that they can continue to work and be able to have funds to have professional caregivers or for people to go to adult daycare centers or things like that so they can remain working.
It's pretty limited though, right?
It's pretty limited. There's still a long ways to go, but we're really excited because this is a first of its kind in the nation. No other state has this.
And what you're saying is it's a step in that direction.
Yes, it's a step in the right direction.
It's the Alzheimer's Association Aloha Chapter, and their five area walks are kicking off on August 12th on Kauai's Honolulu area, September 2nd, Hilo on September 16th, Maui September 23rd, Kona October 7th. All that information is included in the web post of the Alzheimer's Association Aloha Chapter. And our esteemed guest that we were so grateful to welcome back today, Ambassador Steve Tam. Really appreciate your work. It's an inspiration. Always like having you on. And I'll always reach out to you, but if you ever need something, don't hesitate to get in touch. I admire what you're doing, and I want to be of use.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Dave.